Hello and welcome to Sunday Messages with Fairmount Friends Church. We're so glad that you are joining us. You can find out more on www.fairmountfriendschurch.org. While in the midst of the COVID-19 pandemic, Pastor Brock and Alyssa Meyer created video messages for our church family. You can find the video versions of these messages on our YouTube channel.
Good morning, church. Great to be with you this morning. It is always a pleasure to be able to have this sort of engagement with you guys here. We're here again in an empty sanctuary, no doubt knowing that our church family is able to worship all week throughout the week at your home. But we're here this morning and wishing that we could be with you. Soon, we believe, very soon, we will all be back together in here, and you better believe there's going to be lots of energy and excitement. Cannot wait to be with our family. That is the truth. Want to encourage anybody that's going through some hardships, please reach out to the church. Our website is right here at the bottom, as well as our church phone number. Please call for myself, for Pastor Andrew Hale. You can reach out here, and we would love to know what the needs are. However, we can try to connect with those that are going through some hardships. This morning, we're going to talk to you about a lesson from the very first beginning of the story of creation. And if you would, also check out our children's ministry video this morning as we talked about the creation story of Adam and Eve. But we're going to move ahead just a couple chapters to Genesis chapter 3 this morning. And now we see Adam and Eve have been created. They're in the Garden of Eden, and the serpent sneaks in. And Eve is here, and God had already told Adam, you can eat from everything. Mm-hmm. You can have it all. And you can eat from the tree of life forever. Actually, if you go on in Genesis chapter 3, it says, if you would eat from the tree of life, you would live forever. I don't know what would be more tempting than that, but no doubt there was another temptation there. And Eve was being told by this serpent who was in the garden, who said, did God really say that you weren't supposed to eat from this tree, the tree of knowledge of good and evil? And she says, not only did God say we couldn't eat from it, we can't even touch it. Isn't it fascinating that many times we take rules and we take them to a whole other place? It's religion, mm-hmm. where you can't do this and you can't do this. And God didn't say we can't do all this stuff, but we add and we belabor the point and we belabor the relationship. You can't eat from it. You can't touch it. What's the next step? You can't even look at it, mm-hmm. or you're going to die. And the serpent starts sneaking into Eve's, the openness of her heart was in this vulnerable spot. And offers her the fruit from the tree of knowledge of good and evil. It says that Adam was with her, and she ate some of it because it looked good, and it appealed to the eye, and it also looked like it would reveal wisdom to her. So she took it. It says Adam was with her. That word with means his arm is wrapped around her. They're intimately together in this, and she gives some to Adam. So there's this engagement. Fascinating that the enemy wants to attack marriage at the point of intimacy here, where he sneaks in. Yep. Yeah. And so Adam, Eve both take part in this, and immediately God comes into the scene. Adam, where are you? And I just can't help but wonder how many times God is showing up to our churches today looking for men. Men, where are you? Where are you at? What is going on? I see sometimes women come into our church and they're carrying a baby. They've got a car seat. They've got a diaper bag. They're carrying their Bible. They've got been there, done that. I'm thinking, men, where are you? Where are you? And here comes God. Adam, where are you? Something's going on in your home. Something's going on in your family. man, where are you? And Adam's response is, God, the woman is the woman, God, that you gave me. Uh-oh. It's not only her fault, but it's also your fault. And I want to talk a little bit this morning about blame shifting and how we don't take responsibility for what goes on in our lives. It's always somebody else's fault, somebody else's responsibility for the way my life turned out the way that it has. It's the woman's fault. It's God's fault. And then the woman responds, Eve responds, and she says, but no, it was the serpent. It's the serpent who tricked me, because he said some stuff and I didn't really understand. I didn't read the details. I got tricked. And it's everybody else's fault for the fall of man, for the fall of our marriage, for the fall of our home, for why we don't like our jobs, for the way that our kids turned out, for the way that we just don't have any joy in life. It's everybody else's responsibility for the way that my life has become what it is. And so blame shifting is just, it halts anything that you could go do and crush in life. Henry Cloud says it this way. He says, blame shifting is pulling the parking brake on improvement. Oh. You just went, you're not going to get better by shifting the blame to other places. And so what do we do when we have expectations on people and people don't meet these sort of expectations? I was so hopeful that they were going to do this, this, and this, and they didn't, and it leaves me disappointed, and now my life is different. Two areas where I think we can have healthy expectations and not a whole lot of expectations outside of this. Number one is covenant, and number two is contract. First, covenant. We know that the ultimate covenant is the covenant that Jesus made at the cross, the blood covenant, right? But he was taking the responsibility, saying, I'm going to do this for you. And in many ways, when we make a covenant to our spouse, I'm not saying, hey, you're going to commit these things to me. A covenant is, I'm going to commit to you. I'm going to bring life to this home. I'm going to speak blessing over you. I'm going to be your provider. I'm going to set the tone and the atmosphere of our home for better or for worse, in sickness and in health, until death. That's what I'm promising to you. You can expect that of me, because I'm telling you up front, that's what I'm going to bring. And then the other spouse, they say, man, for better or for worse, and richer and poorer, and sickness and health until death. And so I can expect these things that you're going to give, because you told me at the beginning that you were going to give these things. In a contract, also, I'm signing the dotted line for a job. Hey, can you perform these duties? Yes, I will perform this. I will be here. This project will get done. Yes, we can make this many parts, this amount of hours of the day. We can do this many widgets this throughout the week. We can paint this many houses. We can, whatever the job is, right? We can create this many couches this week. I sign my name. I'm agreeing that you can expect this of me. But many times what we do in life is we expect things in our relationships where the expectations haven't been clearly provided, and what ends up happening is the heart gets dinged, because you were supposed to, or you should have, but you didn't, and it leaves me disappointed. And what happens is I blame that my life didn't turn out, because I was expecting that you were going to do this, this, and this, and it just didn't happen. And many times we can kind of settle into these roles, or I was so hopeful that you were going to be the source of my joy, and yet you just disappoint me, and you were going to be my best friend, and why aren't you there? And you're moving the needle in the inner atmosphere of my heart. And I was so hopeful, and I expected you to give me something that you just didn't. Alyssa, will you share a little bit about this? Eleanor Roosevelt has this amazing quote that we talk about often. Eleanor Roosevelt said, no one has the authority or permission to make you feel inferior without your consent. No one has the authority of the inner man except for you. right? It's you own it. It's nobody else's fault. It's you. And you've shared with me a couple times just the wrestle through owning those feelings in your personal life.
Uh-oh. Well, I'm going to tell on myself. This man has discipled me in many ways, and this is an area that I have had to grow in because it's tempting to blame someone for your responses. And so I would find that he would do something fairly annoying. You?
What?
Oh, no,
annoying?
Not you.
Never me. Are you kidding me?
I would find myself getting frustrated, and my response was not the greatest. My voice would get a little bit louder. I'd get a little bit more intenser, bitey. And I would say something like, "You are making me really frustrated right now." And he would say, "Whoa, whoa, whoa. I can't make you feel anything. Joy, sadness, anger, frustration." Well, and what do you think that response did? It only made me more mad.
That wasn't good.
But once I cooled down, I realized he's right. He is so right. I am the master of my emotions. I have the responsibility in how I am going to respond to a frustrating moment.
Yeah.
Am I going to keep my joy? Or am I so out of control that just anybody can tell me how I am going to respond? No, not at all. That is no one's responsibility but mine. And I want to choose joy and peace and righteousness every time. No matter what he does, can I keep a place of peace and joy and righteousness? No matter what. That's my responsibility, not his. How I respond, how I react to any circumstance, it's up to me.
Such
and I want to nail it. I'm going to crush it.
Come on. I want to nail this thing.
I do.
And this, I'll tell you, this is maybe one of the biggest things.
Huge.
In life.
Huge.
Is you can't control everything that happens, but you definitely can control how you respond.
Absolutely.
And what's going on in the inner pieces of your heart, the inner atmosphere, setting the temperature in here is totally up to you. Otherwise, it's all circumstantial.
Yeah.
It's all based upon circumstances going on around us. And that's just not how you lead. It's not how you self-lead. It's just how you react. So you're very much more reactionary to stuff going on instead of leading your life. There's a disposition in which I'm going to attack life. And it's a God-centered view. It's all good. The Prince of Peace reigns and rules. I'm not rattled by anything else. I was with Judah the other night. And I'm upstairs. And he is going bonkers on his sister, Ronnie. And Ronnie is laughing, and she's squirting toothpaste on Judah and all down his arm. He's like, "This is the second night that she did this." He goes, "The first night might have been an accident." I love the way he thinks. "But not the second time. She knows what she's doing." And it's all down his arm. It's all it's all on his shirt. Man, he was fired up. And I come in here. And just kind of separate the two. And I kind of laughed a little bit with Ronnie. It was pretty awesome. It's going to be a family memory. And hey, Ronnie, go ahead and clean yourself up. Head on into your bedroom. I'll be there in a minute. And Jude and I go in. We have this 15-minute, 20-minute conversation about how do I govern myself well. In Proverbs, it says, "He who governs himself is better than he who can take a city." Man, you wanna dominate and take over a city? We're gonna go to war and take this city. Take care of yourself first. What's going on with those anger things, those lustful things? What's happening with all of that anxiety and stress and worry? Govern yourself.
Mm-hmm.
It's not Ronnie's fault. It's not my boss's fault. It's not my parents' fault. It's not everybody else. It's not the woman that you gave me. I need to lead me, first of all, right? And to govern myself well. I'll tell you this, the one exception, this is a massive exception, is perhaps there's been injustice that has happened to you. Maybe you were just a little child and a father or an uncle or somebody touched you. Maybe you were molested. Maybe there was major injustice that happened to you. And you're thinking, how is this my responsibility? How is it my fault? I want to free you of that. It is not your fault. That is absolutely not your fault. And you are not responsible for what happened in those moments when a much stronger authoritative person did injustices to you. Mm-hmm. So let that be lifted off. The conversation we're having this morning is, how do we move forward? Okay, maybe I have that boss that is just a jerk and an idiot. Good news, you live in America. You have options. Mm-hmm. You can quit your job. You can get a different one. You can ask to be in a different department. You can just silence the negativity and double down on what you're called to do. Maybe you say, I just need the money. Then get after the money. But you have choices to make in that job. Well, I'm just so angry because of what you did. No. Nobody has the authority. I have the authority. It's called self-control. It's a fruit of the Spirit. I control myself. No, I don't hand the keys of authority of anybody else to unlock my heart and start vibrating my spirit in places of wrath and anger. I control me. All of your words, they don't move me. I own me. And as soon as I say it's everybody else's fault, what I'm really saying is that my life is everybody else's responsibility. So now I can't control my own life. I'm completely left up to the dictates of everyone else's behavior. Whatever you do now is going to impact my life and I'll just kind of accept whatever. No, I can move forward. I need to audit my relationships. Maybe there's some relationships in my life. I just need to silence that voice a little bit, go nuts on positivity, say, Jesus, you are my joy. My joy is not propped up on anybody else, right? Oh, I'm leaning on somebody else's performance and behavior to feed my joy. No, I got to get anchored somewhere else. The Apostle Paul said this in Philippians 4, and then it also was really kind of displayed in Acts 20. Acts 20 tells the life of Paul, but Paul is writing this letter to the church of Philippi in Philippians chapter 4. He says, I know what it's like to be abased and to be abound. I've been shipwrecked. I've been homeless. And I've stayed in the finest of palaces. I've eaten steak dinner with kings and I have gone without to where I've been starving. He says, I know what it's all about. I've lived in prisons and I've been in palaces and in castles. He says, I've experienced it all. And none of this stuff moves me. In Acts 20, he says, none of this moves me. I'm anchored in something so much bigger. Your little words of criticism aren't moving me. Yeah. Your looks and your comments, I'm anchored in something much deeper. I definitely can receive some feedback where I can improve and get better, but I'm not rattled. I'm not shaken. Guess what? My boss does not determine my income. Whoa! He doesn't, because I have 170 hours in a week. I can go hustle on the side. I can create ideas. I can get all kinds of things. I might be giving my boss 40 hours, but I still have another 130 hours a week that I can start doing all kinds of stuff. No, I control my life.
Yes.
And well, I'm not happy enough because of this person. No, stop that. It's not her fault, his fault. It's not the serpent's fault. I got to control me. Well, I wouldn't be so lustful if the internet wasn't so full of whatever, then stop clicking on those things. You control you. Why wouldn't be so lustful if that person didn't wear that? It has nothing to do with that person. You control you. You control where your eyes go. You can control what's going on. It's called self-control, self-governance. The very first government God ever established was self-governance. You have to reign and rule over yourself. In the same way that Alyssa was like, man, I've got to rock and roll this thing. You know what? There are some great things in covenant that we can provide for each other,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
The Bible says, enjoy the wife of your youth. I should have joy in her. And there's some times where maybe that might be a little bit disappointing or the covenant is having a little bit of a rub. But guess what? We're committed to one another and we're going to see the glory of God come out. Or maybe there's some frustration. Maybe you've got some employees where there's contractual frustrations. You have options. You can fire them, or you can move them to a different department, or you can have some conversations and try to grow them and to develop them. All I'm saying is don't just sit here. Last week we talked about don't just sit here and die. Mm. Don't just sit here and camp out and dwell on all the negativity. You have options. Let's move forward. Let's go. Something happened and I've reacted. I got to react in a God-centered, Christ-like way, and I got to move forward. Mm-hmm. Well, I would be on fire for Jesus if the worship team would just play the right song. They don't ever play the music that I like. Then get at home and soak and saturate in the presence of God. It's not their responsibility. They're facilitating, they're helping, they're creating opportunities to connect to the Lord. But you go after Jesus. Yeah. Well, I would have a hunger for Jesus if my pastor had anything good to say. It's my pastor's fault. He didn't ever feed me. Good news. Go to a different church. Be happy. Where can you get fed? Here's the good news. As you make some moves toward health, your life is not everybody else's fault. Make some good moves that start putting you in places where you say, it is my life. I get one shot and I'm not going to blame shift it to everybody else. I'm going to own it. What would God's response have been if Adam would have hit the deck immediately? And he would say, God, I'm so sorry. I did not disciple my wife well. I did not lead my home and my wife, and she was eaten from this tree. God, would you please forgive me? And they would have turned and repented immediately. I don't know. Just my crazy idea, just kind of off and running. But what if we would have owned life at a different level? Instead of it's his fault, it's her fault, it's the serpent's fault, it's my boss's fault, it's my dad's fault, my brother, he wasn't cool whenever we were kids, and so he jacked me up, everybody else's fault. Okay, now here we are. What do I do with my life now? And own it, and let's get after it. Church family, we want to just encourage you to get going, right? And so let's own it. This is where we're currently at. Irregardless of what has happened to us, we got to move on with life. And Jesus wants to heal us and to restore us and cause our hearts to come fully alive in Him. So let's own this thing. Let's be the best we possibly can be. And let's move forward into the fullness that God has for us. Let's not sit here and die. Let's move on to the best that God has. Church, we cannot wait to be with you all again. Crush it in this season of life. Be awesome. And we will see you all soon.
Yes.
We'll see you next week.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Shaken and stirred.
Okay, I am really hoping that the sound was on. About halfway through, I was like, oh my gosh, I don't think I turned the sound on.
You didn't. I took responsibility.
I thought, oh my gosh, we're going to have to do this whole thing over again.
I'm sorry, but, and anytime you stick your butt in there, you just negate everything that you just said before.
Self-control, self-governance, self-control, self-governance.
Poking the bear. I should probably back off right now. Backing off, is that a good idea?
Yeah.
It can eat from the tree of life. This is getting
did you get
very
it?
Fuzzy.
This is coming in nicely, don't you all think? Look at this, it's growing luscious and
I can almost feel hair on my collar. What?
It's hot.
Hot! And then in Acts chapter 20, and in Acts, it goes like this. If you don't know, you better ask somebody. Your hand keeps moving farther south. Let's get it. What is it that Quakers like?
Oatmeal.
So we're so glad that you were with us today. You can subscribe on iTunes or Spotify or your preferred podcasting app. Be sure to rate us so other people can know about the podcast.